the reviews are in, and we're going to tell you what they are because we're the ones who made them. See, how hard is that? He's Todd Vandenberg, I'm Rob Steele, and we're going to start with a series on Netflix because we can do that occasionally. It's our show. We're allowed. It's within the rules. It's a series Todd's been watching, which we talked about it. We haven't said the word pre-pro at any point during this week's recording, so we talked about it in pre-pro. And Love, Death, and Robots sounds weird.
Love, Death, and Robots is definitely weird, and the insertion of pre-pro just for you, Ted, because we know how much you like that term.
Yep.
Love, Death, and Robots. So this is something brand new that just landed on Netflix this weekend. It is one of their limited series. It's an anthology, which is nice because you don't have to worry about, what happened in the last episode? It's extremely bingeable because the episodes are really short. The longest episode is 17 minutes long. So you have these tightly scripted, nicely crafted little animated episodes that have to do with, in some cases, love, almost always death, and usually robots. The first one, and I've just seen three of the episodes. Yes, I know they're short, but sue me. Life happens. The first one is called Sunny's Edge. Great introduction to the series. It is, of course, set in the future because these kind of things tend to be. And it is about this weird contest where they have these creatures. It's almost like BattleBots, except they're creatures. They are crafted creatures. They're not just animals. So there are these bizarre kind of android, kind of cybernetic animals that go into the ring and battle to the death. And there are pilots that human them. There are humans that pilot them. Wow. Let's leave that in because that was...
I'm going to.
That was absolutely brilliant. Wow. Mini stroke there. Excuse me. Anyway, Sunny is a female pilot. She's the only female pilot. Notice I didn't say pilot female. That in this whole battle organization. And this whole thing is about her edge, what her edge is. And she was attacked by a gang and mutilated and blah, blah, blah. So she's carrying this hate with her. So this is her edge, apparently. So she goes into battle. You see the battle. It's an awesome fight. And it's really amazingly done. It's super gory and wild, but it's excellent. And I'll get to more of that in a little bit. Contest is over. She meets with the backer of the guy that she defeated, the creature that she killed. And things get kind of wild and sexy there for a moment, as in, don't let your kids watch this. Do not do that. Do that. And then there's an interesting little bit of revenge that goes on. And then the revenge continues. And that's all I'm going to say because I don't really want to spoil it. But it has a couple of really nice twists that I didn't see coming, which is really good. It looks great. The script for this particular episode is terrific. It's a great lead-in. So I'm really glad that they chose this to introduce the series. Because again, there's no tie-ins other than just this very broad theme. So Sunny's Edge, excellent. And again, it's 17 minutes. It'll be a really nice 17 minutes for you. Unless your kid walks in and sees some of the things happening. Because no, don't let that happen. Three Robots is a very light take on the theme. Three Robots, and they're doing a tour of what's left of the Earth after the apocalypse. Lots of skeletons around. And it's really, really funny how they interpret what human society was doing and why people did this and discussing why exactly did they take fuel in this way, in this orifice, and what? What? Why did they just use fusion batteries? What the hell was wrong with them? So that kind of stuff. Really, really funny. Also has a nice little twist to it, too. The Witness, nah. That's the third episode, the last episode I've caught so far. That one, not so much. It's interesting. But to me, it doesn't hit the high points at all of the first two episodes. So hopefully they pick it right back up again. Again, Love, Death, and Robots, highly recommended. But every single story I've seen about this series tags it as not safe for work, as opposed to adults only or whatever. So apparently a lot of people are watching Netflix at work when they're not supposed to be. But yeah, it's definitely not safe for work because like the third episode, The Witness, how much nudity? It's easier to say how many minutes there is not nudity in the frame than as opposed to how much nudity there is. So again, absolutely cool by that. And that's not the problem. It's just not that interesting an episode. It does have a nice twist, but it doesn't really hold up to the first two. But different directors for every segment. It's great. Absolutely recommend. Absolutely recommend Love, Death, and Robots. Good stuff.
Which is actually kind of cool. And I've seen the title. I've almost started to watch it. And then my wife says, no, we're watching something else. So maybe I can talk her into it now. Never know.
Gory, and lots of sex. Although the second episode, neither one. No gore, no sex. Does have the robots, though. So there you are.
Well, there we go. As opposed to the movie I saw this week, again, which kind of has robots, if you think about it differently. And there's love and there's death.
Yes.
And the difference between what I saw and what you saw is yours is new and mine, wow, just turned 20 years old this week.
That's
which
great.
Is, I know, I wasn't expecting The Matrix to be 20 years old already, but it is. Just threw me off. And I know a lot of you have already seen The Matrix and know what it is. And if you haven't, that, you know, that's on you. I have no control over that. But I watched it again this week because I saw the thing that said it turned 20. And I said, I wonder how well it's held up, because it's been on TV a lot. But it's one of those things that I think, because it's this old, you have it on TV and you don't really pay much attention to it anymore.
Right.
You know, you have it on while you're vacuuming, you know, or dusting or cleaning the house or playing with the kids or something. Because it, at no point does it really become, you know, gory or anything. There's no sex in the movie. I don't recall there being. Technically, Keanu Reeves is naked in that one scene, but he's covered up with a big crane hook claw thing. And you know the scene I'm talking about.
Yes, we all do.
So here's the thing. It's 20 years old now. How is it holding up compared to movies of today? And you know what? I think it's hanging in there quite well. A lot of the special effects, which is where movies tend to look dated, the effects in this movie don't look that dated. They're still being done, you know, especially the bullet time stuff.
Exactly.
But are they being done as well as this original did? Because when they made this, they said it's got to stand the test of time. And it has, because a lot of people aren't doing it as well as this movie did. So the special effects standing up. The technology, yes, it's moved on a bit, because when was the last time you saw a payphone? Seriously, think about that. And it's going to scare you. And I know some of our younger listeners are going, what's a payphone?
No doubt.
Watch The Matrix and you'll understand. I think that's really the only thing in it that seems dated, because a lot of it is the technology. How... spoiler for the two people on the planet who haven't seen this movie. A lot of it takes place in a computer and then in the future, where there's all these, you know, the hover. Is it a hover tank? Hover. It's, they can't call it a hovercraft. It's not a hovercraft. It's a big floating spaceship tank thing underground. Anyway, yes. They, I think, go out of their way to not have any tech talk. They don't say, oh, well, the CPU of this has so much RAM and this and that and all these technical specs. And look at this wiring. It's done all wrong. You have to rewire it. None of that.
Right.
The technology is there. They don't explain it. They don't need to. You just kind of go, oh, it works like this. And that's it. And so all that, all the tech talk, which is usually where you lose people, that's holding up. The storyline. Well, of course, the storyline's holding up. I think a lot of people now think that we actually are living in the Matrix, in reality, which I'm not going to say we're not, because, hey, who knows at this point? But I'm kidding, kind of.
Kind of.
You know, the actors all still, it's not like they're not going to do a good job. And, ooh, I watched it now, and this guy screwed up a line. I don't remember him screwing that up last time. No, they still do a good job, because the movie's not going to have changed. This isn't a remake. It's just a rewatching. I found the DVD. I put it in the DVD player. So, you know, 20 years later, is it worth a rewatch? I think it is. Are the sequels? Maybe not.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, for I keep getting them confused, because they both start Revolutions and Rebooted. Which one was the second one?
Pretty sure Reloaded was the second.
Reloaded. Okay. The massive action sequence starting in the restaurant and going through the car chase. Yeah. That's still a great scene.
That is.
The rest of the movie, not as much in my head. But the first movie, yeah, even 20 years later, I think it's definitely worth going back and seeing.
Yeah, agreed. I last saw The Matrix probably about within the past 3 months. Not thinking about, oh, it's almost 20 years old at that point. But I agree with everything you said. I mean,
it doesn't look it.
We hold up. I mean, you could release this today and no one would think it's like, wow, they kind of cut back on the special effects. It's like, not at all.
No.
It absolutely holds up. And like you said, of course, the acting holds up because acting is acting. Yes, it is. Anyway, the sequels, not so much at all. Those are just unfortunate. But
the second one was okay. The third one just made me go, and no.
All I remember about the second one is basically that car chase sequence.
Yeah.
And the third one is completely unmemorable. It's just like, wow.
The third one, because of the fight at the end, gave me hope that they could do a Dragon Ball movie properly. And then they came out with the Dragon Ball movie, and I found out, no, they can't.
So back when the Wachowskis were the Wachowski brothers, they did some really awesome work. The Matrix is generally considered a modern classic for good reason, because it freaking is.
Yep.
20 years old, though. My gosh. That is terrifying.
I thought so.
Anyway.
Yes.
My second film is also kind of terrifying, but in a completely different way. Talking about, and this came out a year, actually, I think it's 2 years ago now at this point. But hey, it's streaming. And I'm talking about Ingrid Goes West. Basically, it's an Aubrey Plaza vehicle, which is always a good thing in my mind, because she's freaking hilarious. She is a young woman who is completely obsessed with a friend of hers. She crashes the wedding, makes an enormous scene, gets arrested, gets thrown into, a mental health facility to help her work on her feelings. Her mother dies. She inherits a lot of money. She decides to reboot her life. She goes west. Oh, gee, where'd they get that title? She moves to California and immediately locks on to another person that she can fixate on. So, who is played by Elizabeth Olsen, also known as the Scarlet Witch. So it's just this comedy of all the little weird things she does to ingratiate herself, like kidnap a dog, fun things like that. Gets darker as it goes along, as she has to go to more extremes to stay in that circle. Gets pretty dark. in fact, along the lines of kidnapping, things like that. Aubrey Plaza, I mean, it's a fun movie. It's interesting. Yeah, it sounds really fun with dog nappings and kidnappings, but it is a fun movie. It's light entertainment. Aubrey Plaza is awesome to watch, though, because she does have some dramatic moments here and there. And again, they're light because this is just a comedy. But she is a really, really good actress. And, of course, the comic parts are just hilarious because she's just, you know, with a look, like, oh, my God, she's crazy. So it is really well done, though. Just the path she takes and how she kind of worms herself into these people's lives. And things get a little sour for her towards the end. And it takes a really dark turn. But the ending is rather odd. And it's not a hopeful ending. And it's not like she's not dead at the end. So spoiler in a not too negative way, because it doesn't end up where, oh, look, she's dead. This is a sucky ending to this movie. No, she's not. So relax. But the ending is just, it's almost as if they've created the sequel in your head with the ending of this film. And there doesn't need to be a sequel. Please don't make a sequel to this. I really enjoyed it, but the story's told, we're done. Just like when we were talking about on Sunday or about the about Bohemian Rhapsody. No, we don't need to do a sequel to that. No. So I really recommend it because, again, Aubrey Plaza is hilarious. Elizabeth Olsen does a good job. She doesn't, it's not a really, she's in it a lot, but it's not that big a role for, there's not a lot of range for the character, just put it that way. So, because it's all about Aubrey Plaza, which is more than fine, because again, I really enjoy watching her. She's kind of crazy. She and Kat Dennings need to make a buddy road movie, though. I'm so sad that hasn't happened yet, but maybe someday my wish will be granted. Ooh, maybe that could, they could play Anna Nancy Wilson in Heart. Wouldn't that be fun?
That goes back to our band biopic thing, which we can go ahead and mention again.
Yes, which, God, don't cast them as Heart. No. Anyway, Indigo Girls, okay. I'm down with that, but not as Heart. Yeah. But Yes. Ingrid Goes West. I was hoping it was going to be this fantastic, hilarious freaking movie. It isn't. It isn't fantastic. It isn't hilarious, but it is really funny. And it's an hour and a half of Aubrey Plaza, which is a good thing in my view. So, because she's funny as hell. But that's it for that movie.
Cool. Well, actually, you mentioned the band biopic thing. Something yes. we brought up on Sunday. In the show with it today, too. Why not? Posited the question to you, the listener of our show. Which band deserves a biopic, like Bohemian Rhapsody or Rocket Man or whatever? And who would you cast in it? Let us know by visiting the Cinema Savant's website and going to our Facebook page or our Twitter feed or, you know, email it to us. Whatever you want to do. Let us know who you think should get a biopic and who you'd cast. I think this is going to be interesting.
I have it. I have it.
Uh-oh.
Peter, Paul, and Mary. I can't imagine. No offense to fans of Peter, Paul, and Mary, because I like some of their songs, but I can't imagine a more bland, awful, awful biopic than Peter, Paul, and Mary. But
starring Will Ferrell.
Yes.
Melissa McCarthy. Yes, yes. There we go. And who's?
Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler. There we go. Just to round off that. Yeah, please don't do that. I'm going to be terrified if we come back on Sunday for the news show and, hey, guess what they're making? Oh, crap. Really? Anyway, that's the end of the review show. So until Monday, which is like Sunday only later, when we have their news show, you should get out and go see a movie.
That's pretty much it.